Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from two technology experts. And that's not just what we call ourselves. It's what our moms tell people when the light bulb won't download MPEG-4s. I'm your host, Luke Miani.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe even have a laugh or two along the way. That was one. That was one.
So we only have one more laugh that we're allowed.
At a maximum.
At
one
most.
Or two.
Yes. If there are no more laughs, that would also be acceptable.
Yes.
If there are two more laughs, we'd be in breach of contract.
Exactly.
And we'd be liable for any damages.
Exactly.
So with that sort of out of the way, I think we can get started here on this legally sturdy ground that we have established here in the studio today.
Yes.
So our first topic for tonight is talking about what in the world we think AirTags are going to be like and how AirTags are going to connect to the iPhone. This was sent in by Sam. If you want to send in a suggestion of your own, go over to darkmodepodcast.com. That's drkmodepodcast.com. And you'll find all the links to listen to the podcast as well as to send us any suggestions. We've really enjoyed reading the emails that you guys have sent us. So keep them coming. Mm-hmm. And this first one about AirTags is, I think, an interesting question because, my goodness, has there ever been a product that is all hype and no substance more than AirTags? I think that this, maybe not proportionately in terms of like quantity, but in terms of, I guess it is proportionately, more hype and less product than like Cyberpunk, Star Citizen. Those are like mega hype games. This isn't a game, but I think this is... I'm like, why do people care?
Well, you know, those things exist now.
That's true.
Which this, I mean, AirTags have been rumored for a long time. I would argue, I don't know where AirPower fits into the mix. I feel like that was fairly rumored about, and then it sort of vanished.
I don't know, because I think it was rumored like, I think when it wasn't rumored as much before it was announced. Between when it was announced and when it was discontinued, or I should say abandoned.
Yeah.
Between that time, there was a decent bit of like, I think people were sort of like, oh, well, AirPower is coming this time. And I actually, now that I say it out loud, I think that's pretty similar to what we're getting now.
Well, but that, you actually made a good point, though, is that Apple announced AirPower. They still haven't announced AirTags.
Yeah. How long has it been that we've been getting AirTag rumors? At this point,
at least September, but I feel like it's been longer than that, right?
Oh, September? Are you kidding? I thought you like September of 2019, maybe.
Really?
Oh, easily. I feel like AirTags have been at least a year, at least. Probably more than that, if we're being honest.
It's been a long time, and it's funny because it has been a long time, but it's also been the least, like, what, like, if you're talking about the proportion of the product hype to the release, I guess.
Yeah.
There's been, in the release category, there's zero. No announcement, no release, no teaser, nothing. So it's actually, it's, you know, depending on how you do your fraction, it's either zero or it's infinity.
I mean, I guess I can't fault your logic on that one. It's, yeah, honestly, I don't get the hype. I think at this point, it's just the sort of endless fascination with Apple leaks and rumors, regardless of what the devices actually are. Because, mm-hmm. like, I feel like, I don't know, I get the sense whenever I go on Twitter or when I read specifically the comments on tech news articles that talk about Apple leaks, not just AirTags, but pretty much anything, I feel like half the time it's people judging Apple for the things that they haven't actually done yet because it's a leak.
Right.
And they're saying, wow, that's stupid of Apple to hypothetically do this in the future, potentially, maybe.
Yeah.
So it's like 50% preemptive judgment. And then the other 50% is just like wild speculation, correction based on no actual insider knowledge, and just generally people who aren't really interested in buying it. I think it's more of like a spectator's sport than anything at this point, especially with AirTags. I mean, I'll admit, it's pretty amusing. Like, it seems like every week there's some new, ooh, are AirTags going to come out? And then they don't. And then it's just more fuel for next week's speculation about AirTags. So, I feel like as soon as the AirTags come out, people are just going to go, oh, neat. And then never speak of them ever again.
Yeah, like, I mean, realistically, they're just, it's like the Tile, but
yeah.
I guess it'll be better because it's more integrated in the ecosystem. But, like, yeah. At the end of the day, it's basically the Tile. The Tile's been out forever. Like, yeah, no, I agree. People are very into the idea of, like, a new Apple product that I don't, like, yeah, when it comes out, they're not going to, like, they care about it so much because it's this new Apple product that's, like, being rumored about and everyone wants to know what's going on. But once it comes out, I don't know if people are going to care too much.
I mean, I don't care already, and they're not even out yet, because I feel like, I mean, how interesting could they possibly be? I'm sure, you know, this is Apple we're talking about. I feel like even when Apple does announce stuff, you get so excited. And then afterwards, when, like, your non-tech friends ask you, oh, well, what's new? You're like, oh, well, there's this thing. And then, like, when you – I don't know if I'm making any sense here, but, like, when you watch an Apple event, you're like, oh, wow, that's insane. That's so cool and crazy. But then afterwards, when you think about it and you try to, like, go over everything that's interesting, it's not that interesting.
Yeah, no, they do such a good job in the keynotes of, like, making everything seem really cool. I'm like, sometimes it is really cool, but, like, yeah, there are some, like, there have been some iPhone, models that are, you know, some of them are not as big of a leap as the other ones, and the AirTags and, like, all those other things where, like, they seem so cool, and then you think about it and you're like, all right.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay. I think iPhones are the biggest culprit of that. Mm-hmm. I haven't had as much of that with the Mac because I feel like, well, first of all, Macs don't make keynote appearances as often as True. iPhones. Because, like, if you think about it, Macs get internal refreshes very frequently. And those don't require any sort of press attention. Well, they'll get attention, but they don't require any direct, like, keynote presentation from Apple.
Right.
With the iPhone, every single year, that is a keynote. It is a staple in their lineup. So there has to be something to talk about. And I feel like that leads to, you know, you got to fill some time to some degree.
Yeah.
I mean, like, okay, so on the iPhone 12 Pro, I like my iPhone 12 Pro. Do you like, you have a Pro, I have the Pro Max. They're great.
And the Mini.
I also have the Mini, yes. The Mini is the unsung hero of this generation of iPhone, and I will not apologize for that. No one is buying the things, but they're so good. But realistically, the big feature for this year's iPhone was square. It was just a square design.
Pretty much.
Like, okay, so they got a little bit bigger screen. Cool. They got LiDAR on the Pros, which are useless.
Yeah.
I have not even... You could... Someone could come in the middle of the night and steal the LiDAR sensor out of my phone. I don't know how they would do it, but if they did, I legitimately would not notice.
Fair.
That's LiDAR fair. Has made next to no difference for me whatsoever. Okay, maybe it makes the Measure app more accurate.
Yeah.
Perhaps. But again, I don't really use the Measure app all that often. And I don't know. It's just one of those things where they spent a lot of time and they have their little animations where it projects all the dots and you're like, oh, wow, that's so cool.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, oh, I don't actually really use that all that much.
Yeah. Then there were some other things that people are mentioning in the comments. They said 5G. Mm-hmm. 5G is cool. My favorite thing is whenever I see the UW, the ultra wideband, in the status bar, I always run a speed test. And then if it's a good enough number, I'll send a screenshot to Luke.
So what was the highest you got?
It was like 2,500 megabits per second, I think. Something like that. It was like really...
It's ridiculous.
But it's if you really can find it, and if you stay still, once you find it, then you can use it.
Yeah, I mean that's the problem is, so when Noah was looking for apartments coming down to DC when we were doing this office studio podcast thing, we went to this one place which was a weird place. We didn't like it, but on the way out there was like what 4 square feet of ultra wideband. It was literally 4 feet. It was like one sidewalk tile that had ultra wideband, and that was it. And then we moved forward and it was gone. It was back down to like, it wasn't even 5G. It was like down to LTE. It was like that big of a jump. And it does beg the question. I think that it's kind of scummy for all of these communications companies to be advertising it as like a feature. If 5G ultra wideband were the feature I would be promised, I would be very disappointed, because all of the 5G speed tests that I've done have been very, very marginally, if not the same.
Yeah, I have to agree. I feel like you're talking about 5G coverage. Like the regular 5G, not the ultra band, I get pretty good coverage of that, but I feel like I don't know if it's that much faster than LTE. And
yeah, it's not.
And when it's on your phone, and it's like, I'm not going to be watching videos on it or whatever, because I'm not, I got my data plan. I'm not going to burn through my data like that.
Yeah, we don't have unlimited.
You know what I mean?
What's your data plan? What do you have?
At the moment, it's a shared with my family, but
I think I'm on one of those too.
Yeah.
I don't know how many gigs it is.
I don't know, but I'm not trying to burn through it. So I feel like for the stuff that I actually do, on data, I'm not sure if 5G makes that big of a difference. It's a flashy thing. It's great for Apple to talk about. It's great for the carriers to talk about. Not that big of a deal.
And apparently Apple's already working on 6G. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I think I read an article about that.
They really can't wait. I do wonder, though, because like if 5G is this whole infrastructure that has to go out, like, can we not just give it a little while before we start working on the next one? I mean, I get that that's how technology works, prototypes and whatnot, but my goodness.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, if 6G is ostensibly better than 5G,
mm-hmm.
this might be one of those things where if someone pulls up this podcast episode in 15 years, they're going to be like, look at this idiot. This guy was so stupid. Why in the holy hell would you ever need more than 2,500 megabits per second download? Like, we're a long way off, don't get me wrong, from having 25 megabit per second downloads being like a normal thing. Like, it's still to the point where we're walking out of a building, see the thing, and literally jump up and down, and everyone on the street is like, what the heck are these guys doing? Because we're seeing our ultra wideband. But like, hypothetically, 5 years from now, if that's the norm, why would anyone possibly need more than that? That's twice as fast as the internet that I have at the office. And I have no problems with that kind of speed. I don't need that when I'm on the bus.
Yeah, no, I feel like, I could see it being useful at home. Or like, when I say at home, I mean like, if you're really, you got a lot of people, you're really doing some intensive things. But yeah, when you're out on the go, I don't know about 5G. The other one that people mentioned was MagSafe, which neither of us even have any MagSafe accessories or products. It seems kind of cool, but like, not really interested.
Yeah, that's true. I think, I don't know. I've never been a big one to accessorize my iPhone. I don't know. Actually, you know what? This is maybe an interesting topic. This wasn't one of our written down ones, but I'd be interested to see what chat has to think. If you have accessories for your iPhone, there's an entire like economy of iPhone accessories out there. And I'll be honest, I don't really partake in it. Like, I guess you could consider an Apple Watch to be an accessory for the iPhone indirectly. Same with like AirPods or stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I mean like direct iPhone accessories, mounts, MagSafe, cases, screen protectors, even camera lenses. That's another one that there is. Let's get some more suggestions in the chat, because I'm trying to think of all the ones that there are that I don't have, because I don't have anything. I don't have a case. I think I've talked about this on the channel a couple of times, but I have never and will never buy a case and put a case on my phone. I'm sure I'm going to get flamed in the old chat-a-rooney here for saying that, but I've never done it. I've never done screen protectors. I've never done it. And I've never cracked a screen on one of my iPhones. So that's a little flex right there.
That's pretty good. But yeah, I don't know. I used to, like, when I got the iPhone 10, I put a case on it because I figured it was like too expensive to not put a case on. But now I have my 12 Pro. I don't have a case on it.
It's better.
The thing, so with the 10, it was like, oh, it's too expensive, I can't have a case on it. With the 12 Pro, it was like, oh, it's too beautiful, I can't put a case on it. So it's totally, you know, totally fine condition, totally good.
So. I have to say, so far I've really noticed with the 12 Pro, the stainless steel frame is indestructible.
Yeah.
Like, so I've never cracked a screen, but that's not to say that I've never dropped a phone or, you know, had some dents and some dings.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that happen a couple of times. My iPhone XS got a little bit bruised. I scratched the screen one time because I dropped it and it like slid under my bed on a hardwood floor. That one wasn't super good, but I've never cracked a screen. But with the 12 Pro Max, I've inflicted damage to other things with it.
Yeah.
It's that like robust. I don't know. Like I dropped it on I dented my floor at home. I put a big old dent in a wooden floor. I mean, granted, you know, stainless steel is harder than wood ostensibly, but
yes,
I dented a MacBook.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I dropped my 12 Pro Max on the palm rest of my MacBook and I put a dent in the MacBook and I don't even know which corner it was on the iPhone. Cause there's nothing. There's not even a scuff or a scratch. It's actually pretty impressive. You could probably use an iPhone 12 Pro Max as a murder weapon, I believe.
Oh, geez.
Not that you should.
I got to look out for you now.
Yeah, you better be careful. You don't want to get on my bad side. I got that dangerous phone.
Yeah. Well, I could get you back.
Well, you have a 12 Pro. You can't really. That's not going to win. Come on. Have you seen the size of the camera bump on that thing?
I mean, okay, your phone is bigger. I'll give you that, but...
Absolutely.
I don't know. I think I could take you on.
I don't think so.
I think we should find out.
I don't.
Okay.
Anyway, continuing on with the podcast, well, there you go. Not putting a case on your phone is extremely lousy advice. I never said it was advice, okay? I think we should be clear. Granted, we are...
This is an advice podcast, so I think most of the things we say are inherently taken as advice given the context. But yes.
I did say that I would be flamed for saying it, which means that it was not a socially desirable position.
Fair. That's fair. I think you covered
yourself. I think we were pretty clear about not... We weren't saying, hey, take the case off your phone and throw it away. I just said, personally, I've never done that. I'll fully admit that I'm an insane lunatic for doing that because it's not smart. But, you know, I don't know. I just, every time I see an Apple keynote and they, you know, they zoom in with their little shots into space dust and, you know, they're all like, oh, look at the chamfered edges. Well, not anymore, but oh, the look at how precise and beautiful. And then it's like, okay, but if I'm going to buy this phone, I want to experience that. I want to feel those materials, that matte glass, those stainless steel rails. I don't want it to just be all like covered in some $5 piece of plastic, you know?
No, it's funny you say that because for my iPhone 10, the case that I put on it was, I think, like $10 on Amazon.
I know, it is kind of funny. Actually, I think my dad could probably beat you on this.
Oh, boy.
So we're going to have to go back a couple of years.
All right.
And he probably doesn't know that I'm going to put him on blast for this tonight. I don't know if my dad actually listens to the podcast. I might get a text about this tomorrow, but I'm gonna roast my own dad a moment here. So we're going to rewind back to 2016, summer of 2016. This is right before the iPhone 7 was coming out. Now, I don't know if you guys remember this, but there was a rumor when the iPhone 7 was coming out that there was going to be the smart connector that we had on the iPad and that was going to make its way to the iPhone. Now, at the time, my dad was a part of, and he might still be, I don't know. It was like this weird app that was like for beta testing products. So he could by, I think he would sometimes pay for it and sometimes not pay for it, but like if he did pay for it, it was very, very cheap.
Okay.
To get like pre-production versions of products that were going to go on sale.
That's cool.
And there was an iPhone case company that was selling or was beta testing iPhone 7 Plus cases.
Okay.
And so he got this iPhone 7 Plus case for either free or like $199. $199, just
okay.
to be clear.
Okay, okay.
And I think it may have been the worst case I've ever seen. I mean, it's not that it was not excitingly bad. It was just your normal clear plastic case.
Ugh, yeah.
But the thing that was really amusing about this case was that because he got it like right when the iPhone came out, but it was a pre-production case, it had a hole in the back of it for the smart connector that didn't actually exist.
Nice.
So we just had a hole in the case for no reason.
That's pretty, that's, I never heard that before. That's so funny.
Yeah. And the side effect of this, and this case was terrible. He used it for 2 years. This pre-production case for the phone with the port that didn't exist yep. that cost him either nothing or less than $4. And he used it for 2 years. But it was such a bad case that it didn't even like seal properly, and like a whole bunch of dust and stuff got in and completely ruined the paint
Aww.
On the black, not the piano finish space dust iPhone 7 Plus, the jet black one. It was just a normal black one, the matte, and completely ruined the case.
Man.
It's all like pockmarked. And the case itself became like this horrible brown yellow, like the way that those really, really cheap plastic cases will oxidize.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked absolutely disgusting. It was terrible. I'm like, why? This was an expensive phone. It was a 128 gigabyte iPhone 7 Plus. That was pretty expensive in 2016. So I was like, why would you pair this with the worst case that has ever been manufactured?
It's a fair question to ask.
So that was my roast of my own dad there. Sorry, Dad, if you're watching this. You know, it's funny, actually, my dad listens to GadgetCast,
but
I don't
this.
Know if he listens to our podcast.
Oh, man.
Although it is funny because he listened to GadgetCast not knowing that I've been on it before. So he was listening to it one time. And then they brought me on the show in this particular episode, and he called me and he was like, wait, you were on GadgetCast? I've been listening to them for like a month.
That's
so
funny.
He had no idea.
That's really funny.
But I guess, well, that's actually slightly awkward now because I've just admitted live in front of everyone that my own dad doesn't even
yeah.
listen to our podcast as much as our rival podcast,
yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah, our
rivals. Someone's going to clip this and put this up on Twitter and let's see how long it takes Greg to flame me.
Yeah.
And rub this in my face. But anyway, while we're waiting for that to happen, why don't we move along to our next question, which was sent in. Let me pull this up here. I'm not prepared. Oh man, I lost it. Okay, I found it. So this was sent in by Jacob from the UK. And he wants to hear our thoughts on the viability of owning or obtaining a 5.1 Mac Pro. And, of course, this is relevant now because those things are getting pretty old, 11 years old, and we're on the M1 transition period. So it's a very interesting question. And Jacob says, especially since we can get a metal-supported GPU, so you can use a Big Sur patcher on these 5.1 machines, and his school thinks their Mac Pro 5.1 died, although only the GPU is dead, and they are now turning it into an aquarium. And he says that he thinks this is a waste, which is objectively true. If it's a working computer that just needs a new graphics card, it's probably best not to turn it into an aquarium. Also, how?
Yeah, I was going to add. Okay, so the 5.1 Mac Pro, it's not the trash can. It's the one before that.
Yeah.
So it looks like the current one, but, you know, the older.
The OG cheese grater.
Design. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I was going to say there's no, like clear panels or anything on it. So, like.
Correct.
The fish is going to, like, be chilling in there and no one can
Night
see it.
Night fish.
Yeah. Night fish?
There's night fish. They're fish that only like dark aluminum caves.
Well, there's those weird, weird fish at the very bottom of the sea with like all the crazy
glowing ones?
Like the ones that have like the lights that come like off of their heads.
Oh, what are those called? Someone in chat tell us what the light fish. You know, like the in Finding Nemo.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking of.
The angler fish.
Is that what it is?
I'm pretty sure it's an angler fish. Someone's gonna confirm that in chat, but I feel really smart right now because I'm pretty sure it's an angler fish.
All right.
And that could be interesting because there's holes in the front, so the glowing of the angler fish could like peek out.
Oh, I see.
That
what
would
you
be
mean.
Very cool. I'm gonna assume. Yeah, someone look at that. I was right. Someone said clown fish. That's Nemo.
That's Nemo.
That's not the glowing fish.
Yeah, there's another.
Someone
angler.
Said puffer fish. I don't know. That's not it either.
Not quite what
I
you
was
were
right.
Of.
I was right about the anglerfish.
Yeah.
That was like the first time that I've been right.
About anything.
Yeah.
No, I'll give you that one.
Yeah. Wow. Impressive. I mean, I'm going to assume that they're going to replace the side panels with plexiglass.
Going to get like custom, like Mac Pro shaped plexiglass panels?
And, oh,
you can't just stick something on there.
Yeah, I realized.
Whatever.
I think I just completely ruined all of the smart points that I got by remembering anglerfish and thinking that the only thing you would need to do to turn the cheese grater Mac Pro into a fish tank is put plexiglass on the side. Mm. Never mind that there's holes all over the front and back of it. I didn't think of that.
To be fair, I didn't think of that either.
You didn't think of that either?
I was going to say that you would need to get like a custom plexiglass that was the right size, but I didn't think of the holes.
The holes are going to be a problem.
The holes are going to get you every time.
Every single time. You're not going to get away with that. So I guess you got to plug the holes.
Yeah.
You got to get the plexiglass.
Yeah.
I feel like it would be easier to just update the thing to Big Sur.
Yeah.
And then you could just hook it up to a monitor and Google aquarium 10-hour loop.
Oh, I see. So it's not, you're not turning it into an aquarium, you're turning it into an aquarium video player.
I would even argue that you could put, instead of sort of waterproofing a Mac Pro,
mm-hmm.
you could just put a monitor in it.
That's true.
And then just stream that. You could fit an Apple TV and a monitor.
It's interesting.
I would be better. Either way, I think we got a little off track.
A little bit.
But I think, honestly, it's... I don't know. I might have to do another 5.1 build this year. I've done a bunch of those, but the one that I did last year, weirdly enough, wouldn't even be possible now because of the GPU thing.
Hmm.
So last year I did it was either $500 or $550 Mac Pro build, and it was a pretty well-rounded device. So I basically went for the 6-core Xeon. I think it had 16 or maybe 24 gigs of RAM. It had a 500 gig SSD plus a 1 or 2 terabyte hard drive. And then I bought an AMD Radeon RX 580.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've probably already figured out the problem with that build. For $550, I mean, you'd be spending most of that on a 580 right now.
Yeah.
So for anyone watching along at home, if you go on eBay, as I am now, oh my, what? Someone is selling an RX 580 for $750.
And it says 74
sold?
Oh, no.
Oh, my goodness.
I was about to say, there's no way that someone would buy it for $750. And then it says 74 sold. So
that's insane.
Just wrong.
Let me go check on how much people have actually paid. Like, I don't care what they're listed for. Oh, my gosh. Okay, 480, 365. 275, 429, 468. Someone, what? Okay, it's a special edition, but someone paid $700. So, yeah, all right, $400. That's literally almost all of the budget on the graphics card. Do you know how much I paid for the RX 580 last summer?
How much?
$90.
Really?
$90.
It's a hell of an investment.
It sure is. I should go take it back from the friend that I gave it to and sell it on eBay. I'd make that's an incredible return.
Yeah.
Buy for 90, sell it for 450 on a 2017 GPU.
Yeah.
It's ludicrous. But the problem is, I think because of the GPU shortage, just as it's very sort of financially infeasible to build a gaming PC right now, that also applies to the 5.1 Mac Pros. Like, if you want to buy one of those and upgrade it, if you think about like putting in a, if you put in a 580, you're going to spend a couple $100 on the Mac Pro. You can upgrade the processor for about $20.
Okay.
Those are still very cheap. Old Xeons are dirt cheap. Unbelievably cheap. But if you wanted to get a 5.1 Mac Pro, go out and buy one and get a decent, not even a good, but just a passable GPU in it, you're going to be in that thing $700, $800, $900, which is just, there's no way that I could recommend spending that amount of money on an 11-year-old desktop.
Yeah.
It's just not feasible.
And it's not officially supported anymore.
Correct. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So
it'll run Mojave.
Right.
But not even, I don't think Catalina was officially supported because Catalina came out in 2019 and they had the new cheese grater Mac Pro. So they dropped the old one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just ridiculous. Yeah. And it's a shame because they're still decent computers. I mean, they're not great in terms of power per watt, performance per watt. Holy moly. Like, if you want to compete with the M1s, you got to get the dual CPU things. It's pretty insane, actually. Like, an M1 will very easily beat the fastest 12-core Mac Pro. And those things will use, like, 400 watts of power at full tilt. When you're running Cinebench, you're pulling, like, I mean, I think they're rated for 120 watts each per CPU, two CPUs. You're pulling 240 watts easily.
Yeah.
Those things have 1,000-watt, actually, I think it might be even 1,500-watt power supplies.
Oh, wow.
It's ludicrous. And you can beat it with a freaking iPad, basically.
Yeah.
The Mac Mini with, like, its tiny little fan and its little tiny board and this giant Mac Pro going, sucking up all that juice. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of if you're recycling a 5.1, you know, if it's a working computer, there's no need to throw it away. E-waste is a big thing. We don't want it.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
my input there. We don't want e-waste. But I can't recommend going out and building one right now just because the GPUs are so expensive.
You could hold on to it and wait for the price to come down. I feel like by the time that happens, it'll be even older.
Yeah, I don't see this GPU crisis ending anytime super soon. And actually, you know what? While we're on the subject of GPUs and Macs, I think our next topic, literally right next to it in the list, fits into this pretty perfectly. Mac OS for gaming.
It's an oxymoron right there.
Almost literally an oxymoron.
Or is it?
So here was the question. Do you see Apple getting more into the gaming market, and what could they do to get the customers to switch over? I mean, real AAA gaming. Do you think the way to go would be an Apple TV gaming console kind of thing, or just really good GPUs in Macs and contracts with game publishers to make games for Macs? How could they remove the stigma that Macs are not for gaming? Great question.
Yeah, so a lot of interesting points in the question as well.
Now, I think before we went live, you said that you had some thoughts on this. Do you want to start off?
I think we both had some good thoughts about this, but sure. The first thing that I thought of was we have seen Apple trying to come into the gaming space a little bit, right? Apple Arcade's the obvious one, and the whole thing with Apple Arcade is that it's really aimed towards casual gamers or even people who aren't really gamers. You know what I mean? Like you, they're like gamers, people who play games a lot, right? Everyone will play a game every so often, but a lot of people don't play games very frequently. And I think Apple Arcade, or at least the games that are on there, are generally targeted towards people that aren't serious gamers. They're not AAA titles by any means, but they're good games. I mean, there's a lot of variety. They're fun games. They're very high quality. it's a great service. And then there's been other things that Apple has done, you know, adding the support for game controllers to iOS and macOS and all that, which is really, really nice to use an Xbox controller. Or I have the Backbone controller. It's this new controller you like slot your phone in and then you hold it like this, kind of like a Nintendo Switch sort of. And iOS has native controller support, so it just works. And in any game that supports controllers, the controller will work, and it's a great experience. So I think Apple has moved in that direction. Do I see them going full AAA and you know, making a game console or making like a really powerful Apple TV that first of all, like, I mean, Apple hardware is already pretty powerful, so it's not like they have to go way out of their way to make something powerful enough. But I don't know. I feel like Apple has a very like family friendly or like clean or whatever it is that like I can't imagine like a Call of Duty or something that they would be. And there's like the Call of Duty mobile thing that they do, but like a big, like the big AAA titles, I don't know. I don't see it as much with Apple.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that in terms of like brand association, basically.
Right.
Because so I think in the past, there's a couple different ways that you can approach this issue. I think mainly the reason that Macs haven't been used for gaming is the economy of scale. Mm-hmm. There is not a market. Like, gamers were not buying Macs because, frankly, they're not. I mean, they've never been designed for gaming. You could always build a PC or buy a PC that had more powerful specs for less. That was always, like, you know, in terms of, like, a box full of parts, you were going to get better, quote-unquote, better gaming parts from a PC than from a Mac. But that was when Apple was using parts that PCs also used, right? Like, right. Their Intel processors were not particularly unique. Sometimes there were special configurations, but nothing really crazy. However, because there weren't any gamers buying on Macs, there was no incentive for developers to make the games work on the Mac. So a couple of them did, like Valve. A lot of Valve games will run on a Mac.
Mm-hmm.
But none of the, like, as you say, AAA titles, none of the, like, the Call of Duty, The Witcher, Cyberpunk, those are not going to run on a Mac. And even, like, in boot camp or stuff, you wouldn't want to because they're not, it's not an enjoyable experience to game on a Mac, even if it's possible.
Right.
However, think of it this way. When app developers or game developers develop a game, they have to make it for Xbox, and they have to make it for PlayStation. Those are specific, identical consoles, right? You design it for PlayStation, and it works on all the PlayStations. So that makes sense, because you don't have to make the game scale. You're just making it to run on one system, and everyone else that has that system will get the same experience.
Mm-hmm.
With Apple Silicon, you could make a similar argument. Because, yeah, when you build a PC, if you're making a game, a AAA title, and you're making it for PC support, you have to make sure that it runs on old Haswell CPUs paired with ancient 10-year-old graphics cards. You have to make sure that it works on an AMD CPU with an NVIDIA graphics card, an Intel CPU with an NVIDIA graphics card, an Intel with AMD, an AMD with AMD. There's a ton of combinations that you have to support.
Right.
And you also have to try to make it run on older systems. So you have to like make the graphics able to run on like a 980 or a 1070. You also have to make it run well on a 3090. There's a lot of different things that you have to build for. But the incentive is there because the market is there. There's people on those systems that are going to buy your game. So it makes sense. With the Mac running Apple Silicon, I almost wonder if the incentive will come back in a way. If Apple, and this assumes that Apple doesn't, you know, do anything to basically make it more difficult to develop for the Mac. But like realistically, if there are Macs that are more powerful than PCs that would actually be capable of running games, it would be easier to develop for a relatively confined system of computers that all have the same basic foundation. iPhones, iPads, and Macs will all be very homogenous. And there's only ever a maximum of like 6 or 7 different models of Mac. So in theory, it wouldn't necessarily be that difficult to develop for them. So if Macs with M1X have decent GPUs, Apple makes some dedicated GPUs to the point where they are, you know, capable of gaming. And if game developers are able to develop on them, I could see some sort of gaming come back to the Mac. What I think would be more likely, actually, is an Apple TV game console.
Mm-hmm.
That I think I could see, because Apple Arcade is very, like, mobile gaming. And an Apple TV would fit the bill for that.
That's true. I mean, we do have... So I'll respond to that really briefly, but I wanted to also go back. As far as, like, the Apple TV, like, we do have the Apple Arcade app on the Apple TV, and I think most, if not all, of the Apple Arcade games, probably not all of them, but I'd say most of them will work on an Apple TV, and you can pair your Xbox controller, your PlayStation controller, and you can play them. So if Apple wants to invest even more into Apple Arcade and they put out an even more powerful Apple TV to run the games, then they definitely could. But I do think you had an interesting point about like Macs becoming more homogenous and you know, being able to making, I guess, it being easier to support Macs, or the idea of, like, you know, you write your one thing and it'll work on all the Macs, right? I think there's sort of two things that are holding the Mac back. The first one is the game engines or the, like, runtimes or whatever. I'm blanking on the exact word, but, like, DirectX and Vulkan, I think, are the two.
That's true, yeah.
The two big ones. And I don't think either of them work on a Mac. There might be something with Vulkan on a Mac. I'm not entirely sure. But with DirectX, I know that's, like, a Microsoft thing. So that's one thing, right? Now, Apple has Metal, right? And Metal is basically... it's like their version of OpenGL, which is, you know, a standard graphics library, but it's their version, and it's even more native. You know, they called it Metal because it's running like on the bare metal of the machine, so it's like super optimized and all that. So, and that's what like all the games will use, like the games on Apple Arcade, and, you know, any games or simulations on a Mac, you're going to want to use Metal for that. So Apple does have that in place. I don't know how well it plays with the other you know, architecture things like DirectX and Vulkan and, you know, Unity and Unreal Engine. I don't know if they export to Metal or not. But I think the other part, though, is just about like Apple, I don't think, is going to try to advertise towards gamers. And they're not going to release a Mac with an RGB keyboard and, like, you know, gamer lights and whatever. So I feel like if Apple isn't the one to take, let me put it this way. If Apple took the initiative to say we want to reach gamers, and they really, you know, put the effort in, you know, to put out the ads and change the image, and they were able to get developers to develop apps for the Mac, or develop games for the Mac, you know, port their games over, whatever, and make it a bigger thing, then maybe it could happen. But I feel like I don't see people just saying, like, oh, well, the Mac is, you know, maybe it's easier to develop for now, or, oh, it's more powerful now, I'm going to go put my game on there, and hopefully some people are going to, you know, start gaming on a Mac. I feel like it needs more of a push, and I don't think that's going
to
happen.
That's true. There definitely has to be a top-down push, because game developers, like, you have to keep in mind, like with what Noah said, I mean, DirectX, Vulkan, all these game engines aren't really designed. They don't really have an analog on macOS. So it's not even a matter of demand. It's a matter of, like if you're going to develop a game, you want to know that people are going to play it where you're developing for. And why are you going to hire a whole bunch of Mac programmers and invest hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of dollars to get your game or your game engine optimized for the Mac if Apple's not going to really give you any help? Because Apple is very, like, you know, they like to pretend that they're all neutral. You know, they like to pretend, oh, we like app developers. We want you to develop what you want to develop. They're absolutely not. every single thing that Apple does is very, very cultivated and is designed to boost the image of what Apple is. And you're absolutely right, Noah. If Apple doesn't think that gaming fits their image, which I think it very much doesn't, then they have no incentive to make it easier for games to run on the Mac. Like, do you think that Apple is just like clueless and they can't figure out how to get games on their platform? Absolutely not. Believe you me, if Apple wanted gamers, Apple would have gamers.
Yeah, no, I think, well, but I think that's kind of the point. Like, when you look at Apple Arcade, you know, Apple was trying to get into the gaming scene, I guess you could say. And they said, well, look, we have the App Store on the iPhone and people play tons of games on the iPhone. So we're going to get into it by doing these like casual, you know, pick up and play games that are optimized for a phone. And the games look great. And a lot of these games are available on other platforms. The games look great. They play great. I'm not saying anything bad about the games at all. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the games that Apple has and how they play and what they look like, it's very reflective of the rest of Apple as far as, like, you know, they're targeting the broadest, first of all, they're targeting the broadest possible group. They're saying, you know, people who play games on their phones, which is pretty much everyone. Even if you're not a gamer, you play a game on your phone, right? And the kinds of games that they have are I don't even know how to say it exactly, but they're just, you know, like general, widely appealing, mobile games, I guess.
Yeah. And I think there's definitely people, I mean, if you've ever gone on like any sort of, if you've ever had to research anything gamery, there's a very clear sentiment amongst quote unquote real gamers that mobile gaming is not real.
Right.
But you could argue that it's just as big an industry. I mean, it's objectively still gaming. If you are playing poker, if you're playing solitaire on your phone, then technically you're playing a video game, like definitionally.
Yeah.
It's certainly been gatekeeped to be much more narrow. Like, for example, there was this one guy on Twitter that like got into this whole argument with like some of my followers, because he was saying that if you can't play real games, it's not a real computer. Like, if you can't do everything, the crux of his argument, this was definitely a PCMR guy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually quite an amusing argument to make, was basically, if I can't do everything on my computer, it's not a complete computer. And his definition of everything was like PC apps.
Yeah.
And obviously that's a hilariously terrible argument to make. To say, if I can't do everything, it's not a real computer, so therefore you can't buy a Mac. The very immediate thing that I thought of was, well, I'm a Final Cut Pro user.
Right.
So by that argument, a PC is not a complete computer because it can't run Final Cut Pro. So, like, obviously that's a ludicrous and absurd argument, but that's just the way that that's the way that some people think. And quite frankly, I don't think Apple gives a hoot about appealing to that mindset, you know?
Yeah.
Like, do you ever think, like, if you think about Apple and marketing, it's very slick, it's very intentional. They never admit that they're wrong, even when they are. Butterfly keyboard. Could you imagine Apple making an ad for gamers? Just think about what that would possibly look like.
Yeah, I don't know. The upbeat music and the mm-hmm. and the clean the white room shots of the hands touching on all the things, tapping the buttons. I don't know. I don't know if that would work for the gamer crowd.
Like, imagine, like, if you've ever seen a Razer commercial or like an ROG commercial, you can clearly see they're like, okay, this is, they like have like the epic music and like dun 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 dun, 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 and then they have like the lights and the vents, and they're like, oh, look at how cool this looks. Oh, you're gonna have so many frames. Oh man, you're gonna play so many games on this. Imagine for one iota of a second an Apple ad with like an angular, like, venti cover, like snarling computer, and like, oh, look at all these frames. Look at all that you can kill people, play violent video games. That is so not Apple.
Yeah.
it's funny though, because like, I think with Apple Silicon, as I was saying earlier, you could definitely make the argument that it might be easier. Like if you were developing a game from the ground up, it might be easier to do that for a Mac, because you don't have to deal with as wide a range of configurations and drivers and compatibilities, because there's only a finite number of Macs that are pretty small. So in terms of support, it would probably be easier than building for PC from ground up, not like trying to port it over. That's probably very difficult.
Yeah.
But there's no motivation to, because Apple is never going to orient themselves for gamers. Gamers are never going to orient themselves to Apple. Gamers hate Apple.
Yeah.
Gamers, every time Apple comes out with anything, gamers are frothing at the mouth with rage, because they hate it with so much of their core being, for no real discernible reason. Because, like, if they weren't going to buy it and Apple didn't try to tell them to buy it, like, what's the big... Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't... I don't see it happening beyond... Like, Apple knows where they want to go in the gaming space. And that's where they are with Apple Arcade. And they can make it... They can expand it. They can add more games, make it bigger. But they're not going to... I don't think they're doing AAA.
Yeah, one of the other questions that we have here... I'll see if I can find the email. Was talking about whether or not we think that macOS and iPadOS are merging. I think this has been a topic of discussion for a while. Pretty much, I would say it probably started around the original iPad Pro, I think, like 2015. 'Cause that was when, actually, was it that year or was it the next year when Apple started doing like the, it's not a computer, it's an iPad, or
what's
like
a computer?
What's a computer? That whole ad campaign that got quite a bit of ridicule. It's funny because I think that campaign was about 2 years early, maybe 3 years early, because I think it's a decently valid argument now. I mean, there was a while when, Noah, you were basically using your iPad only.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that, like, that's like the thing that I feel very strong about the iPad, is that I'd say the majority of people, not people watching this podcast or listening to this podcast, but the majority of people in general, your parents, your grandparents, etc., can use an iPad for all the stuff they need to do, or almost all the stuff they need to do, totally fine, no problem.
Yeah.
The majority of people.
Browsing the web, easy.
Check your email, Facebook, social media, watching a video, calling, a video call, voice call, whatever.
You can even argue that it adds a little bit more for the quote-unquote sort of nebulous average consumer. You could even argue that it adds more value to them insofar as like the widely accessible mobile games that are available on an iPad are definitely better. Like, I don't really know of any mobile games that you would play on a Mac. Like, I know in the iMac mini video, I played Crossy Road as like a goof, but you would never actually play that on a Mac.
Yeah.
Like, that's ridiculous. There's a lot of iPad games. I mean, my mom has an iPad Pro 9.7 inch that is, I mean, that's a pretty old thing, but she still plays a lot of games on it.
Nice.
She has like Sudoku.
Love that one.
Gotta have Sudoku.
Love it.
iPad is great for mom Sudoku. It's hard to think of a better medium for moms to play Sudoku than on an iPad.
That's true.
So, like, I think there's a very decent argument to be made that for most people, not only could you get what you need to get done on an iPad, but you could probably do it better than on a normal Mac.
Yeah, it's easy. Like if you think about like your parents, grandparents, people who are somewhat less tech literate, and I'm not trying to offend anyone, but for the people who are less technically literate,
and that's not a problem, by the way. You don't have to be a nerd like us. That's totally fine.
Well, I'm not a nerd, but yes, for those people in that demographic, it is better, right? You go in the app store and you download your stuff and it's a lot easier. You don't have to worry about like viruses and updates, whatever. It's just, it's an easier experience, you know?
I mean,
it just works.
I can't argue with that, to be honest, though. Like, I don't know. iPads have been really, really solid in terms of they last a long time, given how much they cost. I mean, if you're talking about compared to some Android tablets, yeah, sure, they're probably a little more expensive. Like an iPad Pro, $800, pretty expensive. But compare that to, like, if you were to buy a new laptop, an $800 budget is not outside of the realm of what people are willing to spend. And iPads present a pretty compelling value. Now, granted, you could make the argument that you have to accessorize a fair bit. Like, personally, I think you need a keyboard. If you want to make the argument that an iPad can replace your laptop, and I'm quite curious, I'll probably do a video where I'll try to replace my laptop with whatever new iPad Pro comes out this year.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to really do that, I think realistically you need a keyboard. You're not going to be doing serious productivity on the screen keyboard. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're writing a lot of emails or doing word processing or whatever, yeah, you're going to want a keyboard.
Yeah. But I think back to the original question, are they going to converge? I don't think so. I could see why people were concerned when iPads started to get more powerful and more Mac features. And Macs, I guess they didn't really get any more iPad-y, apart from the design themes this year with Big Sur. But I don't see them converging because I don't see them really, they don't really fulfill the same tasks. Like, there would be a lot of steps that would have to happen to get the Mac to be exactly like the iPad. And I don't think that, even though it seems close, I don't think it's as close as it seems.
Yeah, I think they don't. They're not gonna merge because, I mean, they're different products, and Apple wants them to be different products so that you'll buy both of them.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But I mean, not just so that you'll buy both of them, but so that they're not making the same. You know, it'd be kind of weird if they're making sort of the same product.
I think for a large part, it's because they want you to buy both.
But yes,
of them.
They want you to buy both.
I think that's
okay.
Exactly what it is.
To be fair, though. No, it's not gonna. They're not gonna merge, but they have absolutely gotten closer together. You know, you can talk about things like the Mac design being more like iPad OS, but the big thing is, you know, the Marzipan, porting iPad apps over to the Mac.
Yeah.
And even now on like Big Sur and you know the latest Xcode and stuff, it's not even. It's like Marzipan. I don't know what was the official name for that? Catalyst, right? So Catalyst, of you have an iPad app, you want to put it on the Mac. That's sort of a stopgap, right? The way, if you use Apple's latest tech stack, their latest, frameworks and all that, the app that you build will be compatible with Mac, iPad, iPhone right out of the box. The way they changed it, and you use Swift UI, and basically the way it works is you have, you know, your common directory, your shared directory that has all the stuff that's shared across the platforms, and then you have a directory for iPad specific and Mac specific and iPhone specific. But the vast majority, pretty much all of your app is going to be in that shared directory that's shared amongst all of the things, and it's just out of the box native runs on all the platforms. So that's Apple's future. If you use their latest tech stack and you do what they want you to do, then your app is going to run on a Mac and an iPad just the same. So that's, they're not going to merge. You're not going to be running macOS on an iPad, but you know, we're getting to the point where you're going to be running a lot of the same apps, and the apps on the iPad are getting more powerful. You know, maybe we'll get Final Cut and Logic Pro on the iPad eventually. So they're not going to merge, but they're absolutely getting closer together.
I think that's a very interesting... It's an interesting point because I think the fact... Some people have been looking to the fact that the... Like, well, I mean, obviously on a very fundamental level, the silicon is more similar than ever.
Yeah.
Apple silicon, like the M1, is an iPad chip. I guarantee that the A14X is going to be identical in almost every single way. They're probably the same exact chips from the same wafers. I would not be surprised in the slightest if that were the case, but with different accelerators and encoders,
mm-hmm.
enabled or disabled, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that they're probably going to be exactly the same. So right now, the you could make the argument that the M1 Macs are iPads, just in different shapes. But all of that, Catalyst, the fact that you can run apps on multiple, on iPads and Macs as well, to me, that speaks more to we want these devices to be more complementary,
right,
rather than more similar. Because if Apple wanted you to replace your Mac with the iPad, they would make the iPad more expensive.
True.
The That's iPad true. Is an iPad Air is $600. Do you really think that Apple wants you to spend less money when you could spend more? No. They didn't make the iPad Air $600 so that you could save $400 over the MacBook Air. They made it so you could say, oh, well, it's only another $600. I'll buy both.
Right.
So I think for people that are afraid that Macs and iPads are going to become the same thing, that is not a very good business model, and that's why it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I think it's as simple as that. And someone said sounding like LTT, what, by being right? I mean, what's wrong with that? Anyway, thank you guys for listening to this episode of Dark Mode. We had a good time, good discussion. Yeah. Definitely send us any suggestions for topics, things that you're looking for advice on. We're thinking actually of next week, doing a bit of like a YouTube tell-all and kind of discuss how it works.
Yeah, I'm obviously much less of a YouTuber than Luke is, but
your channel's older than mine.
It's true. We both have YouTube channels. We've both had a lot of experience. We both have some interesting stories to tell.
Yeah,
I'm sure you have some numbers to share that might be interesting. Yeah,
we can share some numbers. I'm not sure how in depth we want to go on all of the numbers, but I would certainly be open to exploring anything that you guys have for us. So if you're watching right now live, or if you're listening to this, let us know. Send over any questions that you have about what it's like to run a YouTube channel. And I mean, obviously we're not the end all be all experts here. We're not, you know, we don't have 10 million subscribers, but from what our experiences are, I think it would be interesting to see what you guys want to know and see what we could help you with. So definitely send over any questions to submissions@darkmodepodcast.com. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys so much for listening. I have been your host, Luke Miani.
And I've been your host, Noah Rubin. Have a good night.